Hi, everybody. My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. And I know a lot of you guys. I don't know everybody here. Is there anybody who hasn't been through one of my step series? Who has not? Okay, good. Well, I'll try to keep it unscary for the first couple of... It'll probably be a little bit different than what you used to. But I haven't found necessarily that. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. As a matter of fact, this whole thing will be... What I try to do is share my experience. Don't necessarily, you want to lower your expectations. Formally, theoretically, this is a step one meeting. We got to put numbers on in order to keep track, but we'll see where it goes. I don't know what step it's going to be for you. I have this little story that I'll tell one day in full. I won't tell tonight, called Chicken on the Roof. But, you know, I figure if I'm doing a meeting, I haven't found necessarily to have a drink since January 17, 1981. So it's a little over 30 years. Now, I it's not a record around here. My sponsor, John, who's walking around there, he's hasn't had a drink in, what, 53 years? Well, he's not even listening to me. He never listens to me. Whatever. Yeah, I get no respect. And so I came a day when I was 31, and since then I've been married for 30 years, got four kids, six grandkids, and... I'm going to tell you, what I do is I try to share a little bit about my experience, my spiritual walk. I do what they say. I do what I think they say you should do in the big book. Here's what the big book says on page 29. And so when I do these series, I'm going to read a lot from the big book, and I'm going to talk a little bit about application, how it applies to my life. And what it says in the big book is it says, further on page 29, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Now listen to this. It says, each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. Each individual, that's me, I'm an individual, in the personal stories, in my story, I'm going to tell you my story, describes in his own language, this is my language, and from my own point of view, how I developed and established my relationship with God, and that's the only thing this is going to be talking about. Because as far as I'm concerned, these are all my opinions. This whole thing has to do with establishing a relationship with God, finding God in your life. That's why he says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now so that he can transform you and he can do for you what you can't do for yourself. And you never have to drink again. You never have to feel the way you've ever felt. And you can experience what these guys experienced, the joy of living. Which means, I believe, that you'll experience much of heaven and you'll be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which you will not ever dream. Because the central fact of your life will be, without any uncertainty whatsoever, that your Creator lives in your heart. And you know, when you believe in God and your Creator lives in your heart, you don't have to be afraid. And when you don't have to be afraid, you never have to be in control. Which means you never have to worry and you never have to push people around. And so I'm just going to talk a little bit about my own experience. You know, it may not be your experience. If you want to take this as me saying to you, you have to do this, then that's a problem you have. If I disturb you, well, you know our spiritual axiom, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with you. It's not my problem. You know, I learned a long time ago that they can't really kick you out of this fellowship, no matter what you say. So I just say it like it is, and I just tell my story and let the chips fall where it may. I'm a Christian. I'm a Jewish kid, and I became a Christian. I go to church. I'll be going to Bible study tomorrow. I'll quote liberally from the big book. I'll quote liberally from the Bible. I'll say what I'm going to say, and if it doesn't suit you, what you'll do is you'll leave, or you won't. It won't even matter. It's just an AA meeting. So you're going to hear a lot of talk about, we're not invading Libya or anything. You're going to hear a lot of talk about God ad nauseum. And, you know, listen, A is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut who walks through the door, you know, and I may not be your wrench. I may not be the guy. And sometimes you listen to people and they don't mean anything to you. And then 6 years later, all of a sudden you sort of put some things together and you don't even realize you got it from this meeting or something. It just sort of jives that way. But, you know, I'm just here to talk about my experience has been, and my experience has been with the people that I hang out with and that I've seen who have 40 and 50 years, that the people that are not only physically sober, but emotionally sober, are people that have strong relationships with God. And I'm going to quote from the Big Book liberally as we go through here. I don't know how many of you are students of the Big Book or have read the Big Book, but the Big Book is very plain, it's very clear. It says job and no job, wife or no wife, no alcoholic say he can't recover. It all depends upon his relationship with God. The whole book depends upon that. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless other. Here's the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. You know, that's the archway of freedom that we walk through. You know, what it says in the Big Book is very clear. It says, if you sincerely make this decision, being all powerful, he'll give you everything you need if you stay close to him and do his work well. You know, and it says we lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. So that's the kind of stuff, you know, I understand if you just come in here, this may all sound Greek to you, but if you're looking for something more than just hanging in there, you know, I sponsor a lot of guys. Over the last 30 years, I've sponsored a lot of men. And I have a particular heart for men who have a lot of time that have troubles and struggles. There are men that have 15, 20, 25 years. You may not see them or know them that are struggling. They're lonely. They're alone. The novelist says most people live lives of quiet desperation. And they're sober. They're physical. You see, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it's sort of like getting a driver's license. You can be a psychopath. You can be a serial killer. If you're 16 years of age, you can get a driver's license. They're going to give it to you. In Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, you can rape three nuns and a priest, you know, and hold up liquor stores. But if you haven't had a drink in 15 years, they're going to give you a medallion. So you might not have had any relationship your entire life. You might have been divorced 17,000 times. You may not even be capable of keeping a pet or watering a flower. But you want something? And you may be walking around saying bad things about people behind their back and feeling shitty about yourself. But the bottom line is, if you put 10 years together, they're going to give you a medallion. But Bill Wilson said the next frontier in this thing is emotional sobriety. And he said the real problem with alcoholics is their dependence and the fact that they become dependent upon, they have unhealthy dependencies. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. As a matter of fact, last time I was here at the Chabad, I think it was a three-part series on emotional sobriety. It was kind of neat. It's on tape, and, you know, I kind of liked it. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about my experience. You know, in step one of the 12 and 12, it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism. You know, it's a funny thing about this deal, this alcoholism deal, what I found. If you get into it and you study it, I've been reading the Big Book for 30 years. And, you know, I've pretty much memorized parts of the Big Book. I've read parts of the Big Book. And I know there are people in here who probably have 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, people here with just 20 days. But what happens is you can only soak in so much. You know, what happens is we read this book, we don't really read everything. We read what we're ready to take in. There'll be parts of this book that you'll read at 10 years sober that you'll swear you read before that you never saw before, and all of a sudden they'll pop out because you sort of get it when you're ready for it and when you need it. You want to know something? When I first came in here, I read this book, I ate it up. I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. You know what I thought it was about? Drinking. It said Alcoholics Anonymous. I read the book. You know the only thing I read in this book? About God. You see, I came in here. This is the way I came in here. I don't know whether you felt. I thought nobody could possibly, if you came up to me and talked to me about my drink, and this is what I'd say, I understand, if you had a theoretical discussion, hypothetically, like you thought I had a drinking problem, I said, look, I can see where you come from, seeing what you see, knowing what you know, why you would think I have a drinking problem. But you know, there's parts of my life you don't know about. There's things that happen to me that you're not aware of. There's things that happen to my divorce, there's things that happen with my family, there's things that happen to my mother. And I think if you understood exactly everything that happened to me, which of course you never could, because I was terminally unique, and since you could never really understand me, who could know me except me or appreciate my problems, I'd kill you with the pieces you didn't have. And I wasn't about to take my time to explain it to you because you wouldn't understand, you wouldn't care anyway. I think if you understood every little nuance that went on in my life and how many times I tried to make it all turn out right and it all turned to crap, you'd understand that I don't have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems. As a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems. And pretty soon my problems are going to go away and I'm not going to have to drink anymore. So thank you very much for your help and advice, but why don't you go screw yourself? So, you know, I mean, the kind of thing was I didn't have too many people having heart-to-heart talks with me. Because if you're going to talk to me about my drinking, you're going to also talk to me about the worst thing I knew about you and your mother. I mean, you're going to come at me, but it ain't going to be for nothing. You know, you better have some armor plating on. And so the bottom line is, I walked in here with the clear understanding that all alcoholics have, that they're terminally unique and nobody could possibly understand their problem. Like, nobody can, which is why we feel like we're out there orbiting Venus. Because no matter what's going on, we're absolutely different. We're different from anybody. So I pick up this book, and all of a sudden I'm reading all this stuff about booze and drinking and not drinking and what we think, which is exactly matches how I am. And I'm saying, this is how I think. This is how I drink. This happened to me. That happened to me. But you know what's the funny thing? Now I read the book, and all I see is God. Every other paragraph, God this, and God. I didn't even see God when I read the book. How could you read this book and all this stuff about God? I swear, I saw about the jaywalker. You know, I saw about trips and this is everything we did with booze, taking a trip, not taking it, more about alcohol. I saw all this stuff about alcoholism. I didn't even know the book was about God. You know, and 20 years later, I don't even see anything about alcohol in the book. Where's the alcohol? There is no alcohol in the book. I think they mentioned something in the first part. I think the title has something to do with alcohol. The whole book's about, and now all you see is as things go on in your life, and what happens is at 9 years sober, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm sucking my thumb, and I don't know what the problem is, and I don't know what the situation is, and I open up this book, and I start reading, and all of a sudden, I'll read a word. I'm telling you, seriously, a word. Not even a paragraph, not even a sentence, a word. And all of a sudden, I said, where'd that word come from? I'll start thinking, I say, that's the, and all of a sudden, it'll be the answer. Because the problem I have, the thing I'm focusing on, and all those step meetings I went to, and all those people I spoke to, all my sponsors went absolutely nothing. I apply this problem on it. I read that, and all of a sudden I see that word. I said, that's the answer. And now I'll never forget that word. And now I can tell you about that word that I learned about, and I didn't even know about when I had. I mean, this thing is such a growing sort of deal. So I know when I'm doing a meeting like this, and there's like 50 or 60 people here, or whatever it is, you know, it's like 50 or 60 meetings. You know, I've done meetings in front of like 1,000, 2,000 people, and you know, after the meeting, people come up to you, and it's very nice, they're gratifying, they come up to you, they say, thank you very much, and some person will talk to you and says, you know, when you said this, and they'll tell you about something that you said in an hour-long meeting, and then another person will come up and says, you know, I really appreciate it, when you said that, and they'll talk about something completely different. And somebody will say, when you said this, and you'll get 20 people come up to you, and they'll thank you for 20 different things you said, and they're all different. And one or two of them you actually did say. You know what I mean? Who knows what people are hearing out there? You know what I mean? You know, I get the credit for it, but who knows what? There's what I'm saying, there's what you're hearing, and every person is hearing a different thing. And so some person comes out of there and he says, and he gets, what do they, they don't put a label on it. You know, it's supposed to be a first, they get out of there and all of a sudden it has something to do with cementing their idea of the second step. Or all of a sudden they start looking at God differently. All of a sudden they start looking at faith. Or it's the third step. Or it's the 10th step. Or it's the 12th step. All of a sudden they're looking at the first step. Everybody gets whatever they get out of it. And that's how this thing works. And you know, all I got to do is try to, I don't even have to do a good meeting. I just have to do the best meeting I can do tonight. I told this story, you know, I went down to about 27 years ago, I started doing the steps, this kind of thing, and I was doing the step series down in Homestead, Florida, and, you know, I was doing like the fourth step, and you know, I was talking to people, and, you know, alcoholics have this, one of the problems we have, it's, one of the things I quoted when I stopped, I said, in the 12 12, it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism, and his devastating weakness, and all its consequences, sobriety will be precarious. Of true happiness, he'll find none at all. How would you like to have that situation? Have precarious sobriety where you don't have true happiness. Doesn't sound too inviting to me. But unless you accept your alcoholism and it's devastating weakness and all. Well, they're talking about something more than just drinking. And until people understand this alcoholism is brought, the drinking isn't even the alcoholism. I never even experienced alcoholism until I got sober. Alcohol, we named the disease after the cure. No woman, no car, no amount of money ever worked for me quite as well as just a few drinks, and that's why I drank it. And I defy anybody to drink alcohol and have to do for them what it did for me and then stop. You're not going to do it. No woman, no car, no amount of money never did quite as much for me as just a few drinks, and that's why I drank it. Now, the fact of the matter is alcohol doesn't work for me anymore. It stopped working for me, so I stopped drinking it. The sad part about my life is alcohol stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me, so I hurt a lot of people, and I hurt myself. But what the big book says, it says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. That's why you drank, that's why I drank. It says they are restless, they are irritable, and they are discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So what the big book says, it says, we are restless, irritable, and discontented. And you could add a whole lot of things. You could say depressed, tripolar, bipolar, whatever the hell you want to put on, whatever polar you want to put on there. You know what I mean? I heard Alan say he had ADD. You know, I have DDA, which is like ADD, but I'm dyslexic. So I'm like back. I got all that. You know, you could pile whatever. The point is, we are this. We are in a state of uncomfortability. Unless and until we can again experience a sense of ease and have comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Which means that when we're sober, we feel lousy no matter what's going on. So my problem is not drinking, my problem is sobriety. Drinking was the solution to my problem. That's why when you see an alcoholic drinking a lot so he cannot be sober. We drink because we don't want to be sober. No, listen, you guys are all sober, right? Well, you understand the reason alcoholics drink is because they don't want to be like you. The last thing an alcoholic wants to be is sober. This is what you have to understand. If you're sober, now, are you sober? Well, that's the problem. Sober is not the solution to the problem. Sober is the problem. You understand? Until you understand that being sober is a horrible problem for an alcoholic, you'll never quite understand the devastating weakness of this disease. You'll think if you're sober, you're okay. No, if you're sober, you're in trouble. The day you realize that sobriety is the worst thing that could ever happen to you is the day you'll start going to a lot more meetings and really get a sponsor. Sobriety is a scary thing because then you have to deal with what's going on in the world with people, things, and uncontrollable situations and your own mind, which is ganging up against you without the benefit of that thing, which will help you commit suicide temporarily so you never have to deal with it again. So unless you understand the devastating weakness of this disease, a disease that kills you and gangs up in you when you're sober, you don't even know it. Until you say, listen, I didn't know anything about alcoholism when I was drinking. I knew about drunk. That's all you know about when you drink. You know about drunk. You take an alcoholic right here and you have him drink a bottle of scotch. And you take a non-alcoholic and have him drink a bottle of scotch, I guarantee you they'll look exactly the same. You want the drunk is drunk. But I'll tell you the difference. You take an alcoholic not drinking and watch how he acts and how he acts towards people. You watch the terms he uses, the phrases he uses. Who do you think you are? You can't talk to me like that. You don't know who you're screwing with. You don't know who you're screwing with. You know, I can't believe this is happening to me. Why me? Why is this always happening to me? Life is unfair. You start listening to just the way he thinks, the phrase he uses, you know, how he looks at his life, and it's a completely different. That's alcoholism. And I didn't start experiencing alcoholism until I was 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years sober. When I was going nuts and I was 18 months sober and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, I knew it couldn't be booze because I haven't had a drink in 18 months. And it wasn't alcohol. It was something called alcoholism. So if you're an alcoholic, let me tell you something. If alcohol is your problem, you don't even belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a solution for you. Just stop drinking. Everything will be wonderful. Just stop drinking. You don't have to go to meetings. You don't have to chip in the money. But if you have the disease I have, you stop drinking. That's just the beginning of the emotional roller coaster that happens with this disease. When I stopped drinking, I got well enough to really commit suicide and to really hurt myself. Because I don't know whether you know what's going on out there, and it's been going on for years and it hasn't changed, but it's crazy. People are crazy. The world is crazy. You know what I mean? Have you been watching TV? Between Libya, between Japan, between whatever else they want to throw at you, between the billboards, between every billboard of the world is, by the way, designed to tell me that I'm a failure. You know, whether it's Viagra or Rolex or women, I mean, there's not, it's like the entire world is a group of mirrors to tell me of everything I don't have and that I'm not. You know what I mean? And what I could be and I could. I mean, the world will gang up and kill you. It's out to destroy you, and you have virtually, if you haven't figured out, you have no control of what's going to happen to you after you walk out the door. You haven't been living in the same world I have. And here's the real scary part. The real scary part is all that stuff that's preying upon my mind. You know, it's like I heard somebody say, for group therapy, I don't need group therapy. All I have to do is drive alone in my car. You know, it's group therapy for me. You know, what do they call that? The committee? The committee? That's not even the committee you have to worry about. At least they're meeting in public. You know what I mean? Well, listen, when you could report on the committee, when you could say the committee, I got the committee, that means you're at least invited to the meetings. They're letting you in. The committee you guys got to worry about is the ones that are meeting in secret, like the executive committee. They're meeting in secret. You don't even know they're meeting. That's the committee that tells you, yeah, marry that guy, marry that girl. And you say, why did I do that? You don't even know because the committee set up a single. You weren't even invited to the meeting. They're like doing the planning, you know. There's some stuff going on undercover that you're not even aware of. The committee is the least of your problems, you know. you're in the shower, you're driving your car, and all of a sudden it crosses your brain, I'm a piece of shit, I'm an idiot, I'm a jerk, I don't deserve to live. You say, where did that thought come from? The committee sent it up. You just weren't there when it came from. It didn't come from Venus, it came from the committee. You know? Now, how do you live your life? And that's the way you're thinking, that's the way you're acting sober. You know, so unless you, until an alcoholic accepts his devastating weakness and all its consequences, and that could be taking years to even understand what all the consequences. They talk about old ideas. They don't talk about an old idea. You get rid of the alcohol. Listen, you get rid of the I can drink like other people thing, like real fast, or you don't survive in here. Then it's on to the really good, the old ideas. The old ideas, like 2 million of them, that I discover like one at a time every 10 years, you know, or something like that. And then you got to try to get rid of them. Like somehow, you know, somehow I have something. One of the old ideas is that anything out there has actually anything to do with me. You know, it's amazing how worldly clamors can tear me away from this thing. It's amazing how many things I can choose to worry about that have nothing to do with my life. It's amazing how much crap I can populate my brain with and think about that has nothing to do with anything but to make me sick and feel bad for myself. But I sort of have to do it because I'm addicted to thinking negative thoughts. You know, I'll have people come up to me and say to me, what do you think about this? And they'll say something to me, and I'll say, I don't. And that's where it stops. I don't think about it. What do you think about Charlie Sheen? I don't. What do you think? They'll start talking to me about things that are public, that the whole world is talking about, that somehow I guess they think means something or makes something. I said, I don't think about that. You know why? Because I studied the big book and I studied the Bible. And you know, the Apostle Paul says, just think on these things. Whatever is good, whatever is righteous, whatever is wonderful, whatever has to do with love, whatever is of good standing, think of these things, and the God of peace will settle upon you. And I'm not even quoting it all correctly, and all I know is when I think of nothing but good things, and I watch out what I let in my mind and what people I let in my mind, I start feeling good. And then I go to meetings, and I get to talk to people that feel shitty, and they want to know why they feel shitty, and then they go outside and they talk about Charlie Sheen. And they talk about other people behind their back. And it's always bad stuff about other people. And they don't understand why they feel lousy. Because they don't understand why should anything they say out of their mouths have anything to do with what's going on in their brain. And then you discover that what comes out of your mouth has everything to do with what's going on inside of you. And that you are with what comes out of your mouth. And if you talk about other people behind your back, you know, I was a gossipaholic. Alcoholic is the least of my problems. I got rid of the alcohol. I was a gossipaholic. If I was sitting alone in a bar anywhere with you, I'll tell you what I was talking about. I was talking about people that weren't there and there were bad things behind their back. I always have to have a TV going or a radio going or something going on, or else I felt bad. I felt uncomfortable with silence, because silence for me meant I was thinking thoughts and they were bad thoughts about myself and other people, and I never wanted to think those thoughts. You know, and if you wanted to talk to me, I'd start talking about Steve or Joe or Charlie or somebody like that, and this kind of stuff. The real alcoholism had to be burned out of me because I was addicted to that stuff. I thought it was part of my personality. I thought it was okay. And I didn't like being corrected. I'm like alcoholics. I didn't like being corrected. You know what I mean? And it was natural to me because all I did was talk about other people and crap about other people behind their back. And I'm sitting one day with my sponsor at a meeting and with four other guys, and the meeting hadn't started, and I started talking about Steve. Something. You know how it is. Boy, somebody better watch out for Steve. He's really screwing up. He's this, that, and the other thing. And my sponsor turned to me, because when you hang around with men who are doing this thing and are on a spiritual path, and they hang around with other men, you know, they love you, but you want something, they're not scared to rebuke you. You know why? Because they've lost that other thing alcoholics have, that, you know, I was an acceptaholic. Everybody has to love me. What? He doesn't like, man, I'll tell you, one of my sponsors once, I said, you still get resentments? He says, get them, I give them. I said, man, that was like amazing to me. You know, I wouldn't be able to stand the fact if I knew or thought, if somebody came up to me and says, you know, Joe at a party said this about you. You know what Joe so-and-so said about you? If I thought that there was somebody out there that didn't like me, that's good for, you know, sucking my thumb for 5 weeks. Because I was a thumb-sucking crybaby. That's good. Why didn't he like me? What did I do? Call him, you know, what did I do to hurt you? How can I fix things up? Because I couldn't stand the possibility I had to be accepted. All alcoholics are like that. That's part and parcel of the disease. The unbelievable possibility that somebody might not like you or might not, I mean, that's why I drank. I'd walk in that bar. Are they going to like me? Is the group going to accept me? I'd take a couple of pops of that booze. I felt like I owned the group. You know what I mean? That's what it did for me. You know, I was a nothing or a nobody. I took a couple of pops of this. I became an almost. When you're a nothing, almost is top of the world. You know what I mean? And you know, so I could be accepted, so I could feel okay. I couldn't stand the possibility that people not, all alcoholics are like that. They come out of treatment. What's the first thing they say? This is what they're told in treatment. This is what they realize. They're going to die if they drink. They're going to lose everything and die if they drink. You're going to die if you drink. Now, this is their question. What will I say if somebody says, do you want to drink? Now think about it. You've just been told you're going to die if you drink. Now, normal people, if they're told they're going to die if you drink, if somebody comes up to you and says, have a drink, you shoot them. You don't really give a crap. You know what I mean? But you see, here's when an alcoholic says, what do I say when somebody asks me whether I'll have a drink? This is what they're really saying. They're saying, look, I know if I drink, I'm going to die. But you got to understand, I feel so crappy about myself. No matter what I put out there, I feel like I'm such a piece of crap that people have to love me. And so if they come up to me and say, would you like a drink or have a drink? I've got to have a cover story so that I can somehow get out of drinking, but they will still love me and accept me. Because the one thing is I don't want them to reject me. So tell me what I can say to them so they'll still like me even though I'm not drinking with them. Okay? Because if you can't tell me that, then I'm going to have to drink and kill myself, because I would rather drink and kill myself and flush my family down the toilet than risk the possibility that this puke might not like me. That's what they're really saying. They're saying, tell me something I can say to somebody so it won't hurt their feelings and they won't look down on me and they won't laugh at me or something like that. And you know what my sponsor said to me? He said, this is like amazing. He says, this is what you say, Russell. No thank you. Won't they do? Because that's what alcoholics do. Their whole life, their entire life is spent, well, if I say this, what will they say? Second guessing themselves. Why did I say this? If I say this, what will they say? You know, all scared of, that's why it says fear of people and of economic insecurity. It's all filtered through the, what will they think? What will they say? What will I be? You know, and everything like that. And it just runs through your entire life. So by the time you're done living your life, you're not even living your life. You're living some life you think some guys want you to live that's not even thinking about you. You know, so there's a lot of old ideas to this alcoholism thing that I had to learn about. So I'm sitting there next to my, I was telling you the story, I'm sitting there next to my sponsor, and I start talking about this guy, Steve. And my sponsor, you know, at that time was Bob Sullivan. He said to me, he said, look, this is what he said to me. He looked me in the eye. He said exactly that. You know how it says we get a new perspective in AA, how it says in 12 and 12? Through 1,000 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. It says this is how we get a new perception about ourselves, a new paradigm. Through 1,000 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. Anybody been humiliated? I don't know much about humility, but I know a lot about humiliation. You ever been humiliated? As a matter of fact, you didn't come in here because you were riding the crest. You know, you got $1 million in the bank, everything's going okay. I think I'll go into Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I know what's going on with Charlie Sheen. He's got money. I mean, God bless him. I'm praying for him, but he's got money. You know, money will keep you out there for a long time. You can be a big show. You can buy a lot of people that hang around. You think you're cool for a long time. You take Charlie Sheen, you take the money away from him, you've got him in these rooms. Trust me, he's in these rooms or he's dead. You know what I mean? Humiliation will get you real far. You don't need much in AA. All you need is desperation, and that's all you need. And I was desperate, and I came to these rooms because I was desperate. So that's what got me to change my opinion about things, you know. And I came in here and I started talking about Steve. Not because I'm a bad guy, because when there's silence in the room, I'm used to talking about other people behind their back. At which point my sponsor looked at me and says, you know, Russell, he says, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't talk about other people behind their back. We don't character assassinate them or talk about other people behind their back unless you have something good to say. So unless you have something good to say about the person you're talking about, why don't you just shut up? That's what my sponsor, can you imagine that? I'm like new in AA. Doesn't he realize like love and tolerance is our code? You know, I don't think he's supposed to do that. I think it's like a violation of the AA code. He was like hurting. I was like new. I was like, if somebody talked to me like that, I'd walk out the door. Well, I guess you didn't have the disease I had, because I was scared to walk out the door, because no matter what he did to me, I was scared of drinking. You know, I'll tell you what, if somebody can say something to you that forces you to walk out the door in Alcoholics Anonymous, you really need to start drinking again, because you haven't drank enough. Because I drank so much that there is nothing that could possibly happen in AA that would get me to walk out the door, because it was that bad. So, I mean, you just haven't had it bad enough for your walk out the door. If somebody can say something in AA that will hurt your feelings and say, I'm leaving this place, you really need to drink some more and get it over with. You know, get that out of your system. So, you know, he says that to me, and he hurt my feelings. He said that in front of other people. He, like, humiliated me. So, you know, he says, you know, why don't you just shut up? So I'm, of course, doing what alcoholics do. I'm justifying myself. I'm thinking about him. I'm taking his inventory. I'm thinking about killing his wife, his dog, you know. Chopping him up into a million pieces. Then I put him back together again, and I chop him up again, and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And, you know, I'm saying, he had no right to say that. Why did he say that? It's not fair he said that. And, you know, I walked out. I was all set to fire him and leave AA. And then I realized, even at 1 month or 2 months, that my not drinking had something to do with him. And then I didn't want to drink. And you'd be surprised if you don't want to drink and if you're scared of drinking. If you're, no matter how dumb you are, let me tell you something. The fear of drinking is really the beginning of wisdom. You'd be surprised if you don't want to drink in the worst way, how brilliant that will make you. You will make the smartest moves you'll ever make in your life, not because you're brilliant, just because you're scared of drinking. So things that you would do that'll kill you, that'll seem, and you know what happened? As much as I wanted to leave, I was so scared of drinking, I went back. I went back because I didn't want to drink. And I was scared somehow, because I had never been able to stop drinking before. And working with him, I stopped drinking. And I whacked back and I stopped. And you know what I did? Guess what I did? Because if you're an alcoholic, you're an acceptaholic. You're a belongaholic. You're a blendaholic. I'm not a leader, I'm a blender. Listen, here's the deal. If I'm in Key West, I'm drinking what are you drinking in Key West? I'm drinking margaritas. If I'm in a customary Western bar, I'm drinking beer. If I'm in the Swank Hotel in New York, I'm drinking like Manhattans or Scotches or something. I never get it mixed up. I never go into a country Western bar and say, give me a margarita. You know, because I don't want people. If I'm in a Coke party, I'm doing cocaine. If I'm smoking marijuana, I'm smoking dope. I'm doing whatever you're going to be doing in order to blend in. Who's kidding who? That's what I am. I want to blend. That sort of wanting to blend that almost killed me out in the street, like to save my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I wanted to blend with people who had their act together. So I started, listen, if you're an alcoholic, what's the big deal? Even if you don't believe, listen, what does an alcoholic know about being sincere? I mean, I said to my sponsor once, I didn't want to hold hand during the Lord's Prayer because I didn't know whether I believed in God. I didn't want to be a hypocrite. He said, too late. He says, you don't even get an Alcoholics Anonymous until you. If you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, you've already crossed Hypocrites Anonymous a long time ago. You know? What, you mean saying one thing and doing another? Come on, please. You know, that's before your 10th birthday, you know? And so, what's the big deal in prostituting yourself and being a hypocrite? And, you know, listen, I wanted to belong. So, you know, I didn't want to be humiliated again. I didn't want to hurt. So, you know what I did? I stopped talking about other people for the most part, not perfectly, especially in front of my sponsor and other people. He said he hurt me. He spanked me. He hurt me. I got humiliated. You know, I learned the lesson. You know what happened? I stopped talking about other people behind their backs. As a matter of fact, I got so good at it. 2 weeks later, I heard two other guys talking about somebody behind their back. I said, look, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't talk about other people. I became like the AA police. You know what I mean? Now the AA police all of a sudden. You know, and you know what happened? A funny thing happened when I stopped. You know, when you stop talking about other people behind your back, you know what you have to do? It's an interesting thing what you have to do. Because what happens is, as an alcoholic, you want to talk about other people behind their back. So you'll be sitting with somebody, and you'll want to say something like, you know that guy Steve? And you know what you'll do? You ready for this? This is like an amazing thing. You'd be surprised. It's amazing that alcoholics can do this. You'll stop yourself from saying something. You know how alcoholics like to talk about it? Whatever comes out of their mouth, they just say shit. All of a sudden, if you get spanked like that by your, you know, or something like that happens, you'll start to say something and you'll restrain yourself. Imagine that. That's like an amazing thing when an alcoholic like is going to say something because he has an itch and he, you know, and you got to talk. You know, that's why you'll see people at meetings sometimes in little corners talk, because they got to talk. You know what I mean? Because they got something they got to say and it's so important. So you'll restrain. You know what happens when you start monitoring what comes out of your mouth and you start restraining yourself and saying, no, I shouldn't say that, or that's not the right thing to say and everything? After a while, not only do you stop talking about other people behind your back, their back, you stop. Now get this. I don't even know how this works. You stop thinking bad things about other people. When you stop sharing it and talking about it and using it to ingratiate yourself so you can get other people to be on your side and sort of feel like some sort of camaraderie, the camaraderie of the people that like to talk about bad people. See, that's what AA is all about. That's what this, you know, anybody ever drink in bars? Listen, understand something about AA. All AA is, all the fellowship is like all the people that used to drink within bars, the same stuff, talking the same crap, except there's a few well ones. And they're drinking coffee. So understand, whenever you're with a group of alcoholics, there's a large portion of that group that wants to be just like they were in the bars. And you can always find those people to sit and chat with. And they'll go outside and they'll smoke and they'll talk about getting laid. And they'll go over here and they'll talk about that. In other words, the groups we have in here are right out of the bars. They're the same groups. They want their hair trick. They talk about the same thing, the same crap that'll keep you in everlasting darkness. And you understand that you have a natural predilection to want to join those groups. And if you really want this thing, you're going to need to find the group that's not part of those groups. And I'm not putting down alcoholics. I'm just telling you a fact of AA life. You got to understand what this disease is and where you come from, what the fellowship is. The fellowship is not the book. Well, when you link up with people, there are people in AA, believe it or not, that don't do what we did in the bars, that will beckon you to act differently and talk differently. And at first they'll make you feel uncomfortable. You think they're like goody two-shoes. You know what I mean? Or like I said to my sponsor, you're brainwashing me. He says, well, maybe your brain needs washing. You know, it's a matter of whether you want to change or not. But the bottom line is, when you start hanging around with people that aren't talking bad things about other people behind their back, he says, if you have something to say about somebody, make sure it's something good and start talking good things. All of a sudden, over a period of weeks and months, you find that you stop thinking bad things about other people behind their back. When you find that you stop thinking bad things about other people, all of a sudden you start thinking, you realize that you stop thinking bad things about yourself. And all of a sudden you get a sense of feeling ease and comfortable. Now, if my sponsor had tried to intellectually explain to me, Russell, you don't understand. Every time you say something bad about somebody behind their back, what you're really doing is you're hurting yourself, you're hurting your soul, and you're setting yourself up for thinking bad about yourself, so you'll be suicidal. If he had tried to explain it to me, first of all, I wouldn't have understood him. Secondly, I wouldn't have believed him. I thought he was full of crap. It wouldn't have made any sense to me. But when I started doing it and started doing what he told me to do and putting it into practice, all of a sudden I started getting the results. So there's so much stuff in here that you learn, and it's not so much. Listen, if I waited around to understand 90% of the stuff they were trying to show me, and I wasn't going to do it until I understood it, I'd still be drinking. Somehow, some way, you know, it's easy to say I had a great sponsor, I had a tough sponsor, I had a hard sponsor. Those kind of guys, they're around. You can look for them. The real miracle is when you submit yourself to another human being, because the chief characteristic of an alcoholic is defiance. Just understand one thing. There's a lot of decent sponsors and serious people around here. There's not a lot of serious people that really want to put themselves under the direction of somebody else. And the amazing thing about my life, and I can't even take credit for it, I don't even know why, is that I would go back to these guys over and over again, and I would say, what do I do? Or what do you think? And then I'd follow their direction. So I'm not saying I was perfect, but I would. Do you know how many times, even at 10 years or 15 years sober, or 7 years sober, 7 months sober, I had a situation happen in my life, something that was going on, where it was absolutely 100% clear to me, 100% clear to me what I was supposed to do. There was no question about what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to pick up the phone, make the phone call. I was supposed to write the letter. I was supposed to say this. I was supposed to do that. That I had to do it. As a matter of fact, there was no way other than I could do it, and it was absolutely crystal clear. But just because I was trained properly, or the heck of it, or because I understood the nature of this disease that I was sick, I decided, what the heck, I'll call up my sponsor and tell him. And I pick up the phone. You know how many times I pick up the phone, call my sponsor, and he'd say, and I'd tell him what I was going to do, my plans, and he'd say, are you crazy? And then he'd say, are you just stupid or what? And he'd talk to me for 5 minutes, and I'd hang up the phone, and I'd say, wow, he's right. Man, I'm glad I didn't do that deal. But it was so clear, and I'm talking about sober. I'm not talking about drinking. I mean, I wish I could tell you that alcohol made me do crazy things. Let me tell you something. I don't blame anything on alcohol. Most of the people I heard in the crazy decisions I made as to who to marry and what to do and where to go and what to buy and all that, you know, man, listen, I'm a guy who I didn't realize until I was 9 years sober that if you spend more money than you make, you go into debt. Did you know that? Because I was constantly spending money I didn't have, buying things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like because I had that alcoholic sort of thing. You understand what I'm saying? So here's, you know, the bottom line, I don't know why I did it, but somehow, for some reason, I actually listened to these guys. I would put myself on the tutelage of these guys, and I would ask them questions, and I'd follow their directions. And you just don't find too many people like that, and I don't even know why it happened. I can't even say because I was smarter. I don't even think smarts has anything to do. As a matter of fact, I think being smart, IQ-wise, intelligent-wise, is a great impediment to getting well in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've seen the smartest guys not able to do this thing because they're just so brilliant. They know everything, but that's really all they know. They know all about relationships, but they've never been able to keep a marriage together for 50 years. They know all about raising kids, except all their kids hate them. You know what I mean? They know all about making money, but they're broke. You know, they know all about staying sober, but they can't stay. They're constantly starting over again. They know everything about everything, but they have a totally unsuccessful bullshit life. But they're brilliant, and they're all over Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and for whatever reason, I just wanted what these guys had, and this isn't what it says. If you want what they have, and you want to go to any length together, then you're ready to take certain steps. So you got to find the we in your life in order to do that deal. So anyway, that's the story. I looked some guy in the eye. Wrap this up in 3 minutes. I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. There was a long bottle. You're going to have to trust me when I say I drank a lot. I don't know whether I drank more than you or less. I drank enough. I drank enough so that I lost everything, including my self-respect, which, quite frankly, I think is the most important thing to lose. I think it really doesn't matter if you lose a wife, if you lose a kid, if you lose a car, if you lose your arm, you lose your leg. I think losing your self-esteem, your self-respect is absolutely necessary. You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, absolutely necessary. There are people, you know, and I don't want to use names, but we all know them in the news, like Britney Spears. You'll see them lose their kids. You'll see, and that happens to us too. And you'll see them lose things. You'll say, won't they get it? And they don't get it. Not until they lose their self-esteem. Not until they lose themselves. You know what I mean? Until they look in the mirror and say, what the hell's going on with me? I need help. Not until that happens does anything work. Can you start building from there? You know, and that's what happened to me. And I looked the guy in the eye and I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. And that's when he introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got involved in all this deal. You know, and I gave up the ghost. And I started realizing over a period of time that I realized, you know, it's kind of hard to grasp the concept of powerlessness when you think you're the most powerful thing in the universe, you know, no matter what's going on. And it took me a period of time to sort of understand what they were talking about in all aspects of my life. And I'll close by this. The only thing I can tell you is this. You know, listen, I haven't had a drink in, what, 30 years? You know, and as I said, it's not a record. You know, I got a family. I got things going. And I can't tell you. It's funny. I can't even say, gee, I'm powerless or I feel powerless because it's not even something I think about. It's not like I walk around saying I'm powerless or I'm not powerless. I mean, I used to do that. It's such a part of my just concept of who I am and what I am. You know, I don't even think that I realize that I'm powerless when I start thinking about how I think about things. I am so not in control of my life. I used to be in control of my life. I used to be in control of your life. As a matter of fact, the secret is I actually used to control everything. And my life was horrible. And I was scared all the time. And now I have absolutely no control over anything. And I know it. I don't even know whether I might have a heart attack 30 seconds after this thing, and you'll say, you wouldn't believe this guy did this for you. I don't even have control over whether I'm going to live tonight, or whether I'm going to be alive tomorrow, or whether my car is going to blow up, or whether I don't have any control, and I feel so free, and I feel so good. Now, how is that possible? How can you go through your life feeling you need to be in control, and you are in control, and try to get in control about everybody, and feel so crappy, and then all of a sudden get into a program and know that you have no control and no power whatsoever and feel great? How is that possible? I'll tell you how it's possible. It's possible when you have a relationship with the guy who is in control. And it's kind of relationship where you know where all things work for good for those who love him. You know what it says? He will give you everything you need if you stay close to him and do his work well. All things are possible with God. That's what it says. All things are, but he says he'll do for you what you cannot do for yourself. He says, no, you know what the promises say? He says we begin to see that he is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. It's all about him. You know? So when you start developing that faith, which is what this book is all about, getting that faith, the second step, introducing you, finally the 11th, getting away the obstacles in the fourth and the fifth step, and then finally in the 11th step, you know, cementing these things and even building upon that and getting even further along with that growth, that maintenance and growth of that spiritual condition, all of a sudden you have that new freedom and that new happiness. That new freedom and the new happiness, which is so much better than just mere sobriety. And I'm not putting down the not drinking thing. You know what I mean? But what about the not thinking thing? What about the not thinking thing? How about that deal? You know, what's wrong with that? You know, what about that addicted to thinking? Well, why can't you stop thinking? Why are you okay for about 5 minutes after the meeting, and then all of a sudden you start driving away and you start thinking again? Why do you stop? Why are you thinking about that shit? Why do you think about that crap? Why do you think about the bills? Why do you think about the money? Why are you thinking about it? Didn't you think about it 50,000 times today? It didn't help you. It didn't make you feel any better. Why are you thinking about it again? Why are you picking it up again? Didn't you think about that relationship 2,000 times? Didn't you think about that girl? Did you think about that guy? Did you think about your life? Didn't you think those thoughts? How many millions of times have you thought those thoughts? Has it helped it out? Has it changed anything? Has it made you feel better? Why can't you stop? You like it? You want to waste your entire life thinking about that crap that you think about? You really do. You go to an A meeting, you feel good for half an hour, and then you start the thing all over again because you can't stop it and you think your problem is booze. When you're drinking your booze as you're walking away from here, you're drinking that thought booze, that crap that you think about all the time, settling for mere sobriety, physical sobriety, when you can be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, experience much of heaven, when you can have that deal. Don't settle for that deal. Don't settle. That's what the 6 and 7 said. Don't settle. God bless you. Thank you.
Good job. Okay. I've asked the friend to do this.